This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Houston, we do not have a problem.
Sarah Webb, Joy Drive's astrophysicist.
Sarah Webb, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Now, Sarah, I'm excited to talk about you because I've been saying all afternoon that what if the homes on Mars weren't built by humans and they were built by some other living organism?
Something else. Not aliens, but bacteria from Earth. That sounds like the beginning of a science fiction novel, does it not?
It really does. It's so exciting.
It really does, and it is really exciting. So different researchers are trying to figure out, could that be a possibility? Could we send bacteria to Mars that would help us eat some of the regolith and then in turn almost make a bit of a glue with the dirt that's on Mars and the bacteria itself and then the byproducts from the bacteria? And could you use that essentially as a cement, which I think is the most genius idea, and I really want to see it happen.
You know what I love is if you said to me, Warren, come up with a way to construct houses on Mars, there's no way I would think, well, let's get bacteria to do it. Isn't it just amazing that we have this capacity to think of these solutions?
Yeah, it really is. It's this idea of that blue sky kind of thinking outside the box of like research for research sake, because at the moment there's no direct purpose on Earth for what we might use this for. I mean, nobody's ever really done this directly before, but because of this thought and because of this like train of thought of, well, we could use it on Mars, and then if we could develop that technology, could we use it here on Earth too? Could you go to a remote place and then use it to potentially help make materials instead of importing or exporting in materials, especially for very remote locations, which is my favorite thing about science, is how it will all loop back and end up helping itself around the globe.
Sarah, I'm wondering if this will advance sort of the progress of construction up in space, because I would imagine otherwise you've got to carry lots of heavy equipment up there. Well, it does have to be heavy. There's no gravity. I don't know.
Yeah. It's still heavy, even with the limited gravity.
Could I lift a grader or something, or a bulldozer with my hand?
No, you couldn't. Okay. It'd still be very hard. But it does. So it's this idea of the in situ resource utilization. That is such a mouthful to say, but basically make do with what you have. Mm-hmm. So say I take you to the moon or I take you to Mars and I give you the bare minimum. Could you make a habitat? Could you make like a science experiment out of it? We really have to be ingenious in this thinking, because it's so expensive to send things to space and you don't want to waste fuel and resources and time when there could be an easier, cheaper, more joyful way to do it.
What about extreme temperatures and things? Like, could the bacteria survive that?
Yeah, so that's what they're researching with at the moment, is the extreme environments that these bacteria could thrive in. And we know that quite a few bacteria here on Earth really, really not only survive, but they quite thrive in very extreme environments. So there's a couple of different bacteria that really like living near volcanic areas on the Earth, whether it's under the ocean or above sea. And that's very extreme and almost very analogous to some places in the solar system. So I have no doubt that bacteria probably would be okay on Mars.
Now, at what point, Sarah, does this move from theory to we might actually try this within a couple of missions?
That is the million-dollar question. I think once we start having a direct pathway to Mars, so scheduled launches and landings on Mars that have the capacity for different, more out-of-the-box experiments, and that will likely be with humans going there, then that's a possibility. It very well could be one of the first experiments that humans take with them to be able to monitor. So within the next few decades, hopefully.
Now, Sarah, you know I have to ask this question, and you're probably expecting it, but bacteria up on Mars, I mean, we're taking a living organism to another planet. I'm thinking, you know, invasive species, things like aliens grabbing it and doing something with it. I mean, is that crazy?
No, it's not crazy at all. So it's actually consideration is it ethical for us to even do this in the first place. So one thing that we have to look at when we're sending spacecrafts or probes or humans beyond the Earth is the rate of contamination. And we don't want to put bacteria somewhere where other bacteria could exist and thrive. And so it is a bit of a consideration. At the moment, we don't have evidence for current life on Mars, so there'll probably be some threshold where it's ethically okay to do so, but there's some other places in our solar system where it might not be.
Okay, right. Well, let's move on to something else. A new data set has just dropped from one of the biggest telescopes in the world. What has it shown?
So we have just got brand new, beautiful data of 51 dusty rings shaping around brand new stars. So what we're seeing essentially is the birth of not only stars, but planets at the same time. And this data is just exquisite. If you go and have a look at, it's called the Very Large Telescopes Sphere Experiment, and Google that, this data will pop up. It's amazing. It's like looking back in time to what our solar system would have been many billions of years ago, and these ones are just beginning.
So will this help us understand, say, for example, how rare or common Earth-like planets might be? What will it help us discover?
Yeah, it can do. So it's going to help us understand what is the kind of the rate of development of these different solar systems, and do we see similar patterns, or is it are there different formation paths? So we know that our solar system is really unique. So we've got four rocky planets, four gas giants, a couple of dwarf planets here and there, but it's quite split. We've got rocky planets on the inside, gas planets on the outside of our solar system. But when we look at other solar systems, they're not like ours. We haven't really found one very similar, and we think it could just be we had enough time, we had certain processes happen, but we're not sure. So this might actually help us determine, is our solar system rare, or is it just one of the many that will pop out of a statistical bunch?
Sarah, is there ever a boring day in the job that you do? I mean, this is Christmas every day and in prison.
It really does. I've got Google Alerts set up for astronomy, just news every day. So every morning I wake up and read all of the wonderful things. And then, of course, I've got colleagues who I get to have the tea, if you will, before things are published. And it is a magical field.
Oh, amazing. Now, I love this story. I think this is fantastic. We're going to see a Blue Origin flight set to make history. Tell us why.
Yes. So Blue Origin is that rocket that is able to do what we call suborbital flight. So it goes up, people experience weightlessness for 5 to 7 minutes, and then they come back down to the ground. And what is amazing is that we're going to have the very first wheelchair user in the world head to space on the next Blue Origin flight. Her name is Michaela, and she had a spinal cord injury several years ago, which ended her original career. But since then, she's been heavily involved with trying to understand, could microgravity help assist those with different disabilities, especially spinal cord disabilities?
So it's not just about inclusiveness and getting someone in a wheelchair up there in space. It's also about potentially treatments. And
yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Trying to understand like the biomechanics of how would someone who might not be able to, say, use their legs on the ground, move and do activities in space? What does that do? What does it do mentally? And of course, for inclusivity, this idea, she's part of something called AstroAccess, and their whole kind of quote is that if we can do it in space, we can do it anywhere. And it's this idea that all humans are amazing and that we can do all incredible things, and we want to see it.
Has any feedback so far on what Michaela said or on the work?
Yeah, so she hasn't gone to space just yet, but she's done several what we call parabolic flights. So she's experienced microgravity many times before and done different experiments with that. And from everything I've read about her, it sounds like it is not only an incredible experience, but there's lots to be learnt from it as well. So it really is awesome.
Sarah Webb, before we finish, I've got one more question for you.
Yes.
If we were able to get this bacteria to build these houses and we were living there, we had houses, what would be the one thing you'd absolutely have to take with you to Mars?
Oh, I would say my dog Pluto, but I don't think Pluto would go well on Mars. No. It'd have to be like a packet of M&Ms.
Oh.
I couldn't live without it.
Fantastic. Sarah, it's great to chat with you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Catch you next time. Dr. Bye. Sarah Webb from Swinburne University of Technology.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.